This special session is dedicated to highlighting some of the excellent work being done throughout our community behavioral health systems. In the non-clinical arena, four of the outstanding programs nominated for the Golden Abacus Award have been invited. We have three of them available today. If you don't know, the TED Talks work on an 18-minute cycle. The way this will work today, we will have our presenters. They will take a few minutes of questions afterwards, and then we'll move on to the next TED Talks. So given all that information, I would like to introduce our guest speakers for today. First up, we will have Mindy Clowden from the Jefferson Center for Mental Health. Outstanding. She will talk about healthcare transformation. Mindy is the director of the Office of Healthcare Transformation at Jefferson Center for Mental Health, a position that she has held for 3 years. Previously, she served as the Center Development Director and has been at the center for more than 9 years. Ms. Clowden has an extensive background in policy, organizational development, and nonprofit management. She has a master's in nonprofit management from Regis University and a bachelor's in sociology from Colorado College. So given that, we will go ahead and bring Mindy up and then go for it with the rest. Thanks.
Good afternoon. Thank you for coming and spending a little bit of your time with us today. I'm going to talk with you about the Office of Healthcare Transformation at Jefferson Center for Mental Health. And what I'm going to do is talk through a little bit about what we saw in terms of the changing healthcare landscape and how we thought what was happening out there needed a little bit more understanding and support within the center, and how that led to the creation of the Office of Healthcare Transformation. And I'll talk with you a little bit as well about what we've done to try to transform our center in terms of the organizational culture and understanding. Transformation, it's a really big word that's being thrown around a lot lately. A complete or major change in someone or something's appearance or form. When you think about what's happening in healthcare right now, this is it. The passage of the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act and many other laws that have been immediately preceding and after it have really fundamentally changed the way that healthcare is being delivered and paid for in this country. And it really was the biggest change that we've seen to the healthcare system since the creation of Medicare under the Social Security Act. So let's talk a little bit about what is changing. First of all, more people than ever before in the United States are going to have healthcare coverage. In Colorado, we've been fortunate enough to move forward with Medicaid expansion and a state-run exchange, the Connect for Health Colorado. That means that our systems, community mental health centers, which are accustomed to being large safety net providers, serving large numbers of uninsured people, are going to look a little different. More people than ever before will have coverage for behavioral health specifically. With the inclusion of mental health treatment and substance abuse treatment in the 10 essential health benefits, and with the parity law being expanded upon, there are now more people than ever before that will have coverage for the kinds of services that we provide. There are many efforts underway to look at the way that services are delivered and paid for. You're hearing a lot at this conference, I'm sure, about the need to move away from fee-for-service, the need to look at how do we create payment delivery systems that support whole-person healthcare. And this means that we need to be prepared to look at how do we show our outcomes, and how are we changing the way that we're ready to accept new payment systems? Integrated behavioral health and primary care is becoming more prevalent. People are learning to expect it. There's more evidence that it is making a difference in terms of overall healthcare outcomes. And there's more internal and external pressures to be delivering integrated healthcare. And lastly, we need to really look at how do we change our own delivery systems so that we can be prepared to respond to all of these changes effectively. And to not keep all of this information as it traditionally has been held at kind of the CEO level. We really at Jefferson Center for Mental Health wanted to make sure that at our clinician level and that at our administrative support staff level, that everyone was understanding what was going on and how it was impacting us. Around the same time as the Office of Healthcare Transformation was created, which was about 3 years ago, we also started to really exponentially expand our integrated care programming. And what this map shows is that right now, we're delivering integrated services in 14 primary care practices. That includes 3 pediatric practices, 2 federally qualified health centers, 3 of the center locations where we've brought in primary care, and 3 school-based health centers. But all of this was happening under different program managers, different program models. The staff weren't necessarily in touch with each other. We weren't necessarily learning best practices. And the impetus for the Office of Healthcare Transformation was also in part to look at how do we do this a little bit more seamlessly, stop looking at integrated care as a program over here, and look at it more as fundamentally changing the way that we do business. I'm actually going to go ahead and read you the slide because I think that it really epitomizes and succinctly tells you what the leadership at Jefferson Center were thinking when they created the office. Jefferson Center exists within a rapidly transforming healthcare environment. If we are to remain viable, successfully compete, and thrive as a healthcare organization, we must accept and embrace our own urgent need for organizational transformation. We want to be ahead of the curve and be embracing change, not resistant to it. Jefferson Center's intent is to implement leading-edge solutions and innovation in support of system transformation from illness care to whole person health and wellness care. It was this organizational vision that informed the purpose and establishment of the Office of Healthcare Transformation. So the creation of the office. Basically, what we decided to do was to dedicate an FTE, someone that would be responsible for consistently bringing in information to the center about what is happening in the external world, being a part of healthcare conversations where behavioral health was not necessarily previously always a part, doing some analysis and helping to make the information a lot more clear and basic because it's very complex. And so we wanted also to make sure that the position was high enough within the organization that it would have some standing and influence. And so it was created as a senior management level position that reports to the Vice President of Healthcare and Integration, which is Dr. Donald Bechtold. It has an advisory role to the executive team. So anyone from the executive team, not just Dr. Dunn, can call upon the office for research or information or for help in looking at a strategic issue. And we wanted to keep the cost pretty minor because obviously there's no payment source for this kind of thing. And so it's really just an FTE, an office, a smartphone, and some allocation for travel because we wanted to make sure that the leadership of the office was able to be out and about and be present in the conversations where we needed it to be. The position is a little bit unique in a community mental health center setting. It's not a clinical position, and the background really calls for someone that is well-connected, has a strong understanding of both the physical health world and the behavioral health world, and is someone that is very much self-driven because there wasn't a whole lot of, oh, go do X, Y, Z. It wasn't always clear-cut exactly what the office would be doing. So now I'm going to talk a little bit more about what exactly have I been doing. Policy analysis and research is one of the first things. And I will often be called upon to do summaries and disseminate the information, again, in a very kind of clear and succinct fashion. Doing presentations before staff, going to team meetings. I do a monthly healthcare reform pages, which is a newsletter that we disseminate. And I'll show you a picture of that later. So staff education on healthcare reform and transformational issues, advocacy in the community, making sure that we are consistently being thought of, that mental health is not a side note, that behavioral health is health, and that we're a part of every conversation that is happening. Bringing strategic issues forward. So as an example, one of the things that I was able to do was to say the Medicaid benefits were being expanded when it comes to adult oral health. And that was the first time that that was happening. And it wasn't something we were paying any attention to because we don't normally think of that as really being relevant to a community mental health center. But in fact, it was very relevant because many of the patients that we see have very dire oral health needs. And so we needed to make sure that we were getting the word out to our patients about this expanded benefit. So that's just kind of a tangible example. The second bucket of responsibility that the office has is to look at How do we coordinate across programs all of our efforts around integrated behavioral health and primary care? And so I created a healthcare integration group, which is designed to foster shared learning across programs and practices and to bring forward strategic issues to look at how policy is impacting our ability to succeed when it comes to integrated care, and also just to have dialogue between a diverse group of people who are doing very similar jobs. I also work to foster relationships with our integration partners. That map that I showed you earlier, if we had been looking at that 3 years ago, it would have had many fewer dots on it. It's important that we are continually asking primary care, what do we need to bring to the table, and that we are continually sharing with primary care, what do we need you to bring to the table, so that we are looking at integrated care bidirectionally and making sure that the needs of people with serious mental illness are not forgotten in the integration discussion. I also provide staff education on integrated care and try to really work to build a culture of integration across the center. And so what that has meant is things like staff training on diabetes, staff training on sleep disorders, obesity among children, and getting folks to think about issues that they might talk about in the clinical setting, not in any way of trying to say that they're now doctors, but where they're more comfortable talking about how are those issues impacting the client's mental health, and that they're thinking again about the whole person. I also provide technical assistance and consultation to all of our integrated care programs, and serve as, again, an advocate and a voice for community education around bidirectional integration. I really see the work that we're all forging ahead with as looking at changing the culture and changing the way that healthcare services are delivered. And if you, maybe the pointer. If you look right in here, I think this is where we're trying to get to. It's the intersection of public health, primary care, substance abuse, and mental health. And we often forget, I think, that that all of these different delivery systems have grown up separately. We've had separate training. We're funded separately. The people that are attracted to those kinds of jobs have separate kinds of personalities. And when it comes to whole person healthcare and population health, we really need to get to a better understanding of all of these sectors. And the Office of Healthcare Transformation has been working to do that within Jefferson Center so that all of our clinicians have a sense that they're taking care of the whole person and that we're coordinating care across multiple healthcare settings. So a couple of examples of ways that I feel like the office has made a difference in the 3 short years that we have been around. So one is the Colorado Trust had opened up an opportunity to go after what's called the Convening for Colorado grants. Anyone by show of hands had these at your organizations? A few. So Jefferson Center was actually the very first one to get one of these grants. And what it was enabling the opportunity to have a community conversation with healthcare providers about how is healthcare reform changing your community? And what do you need to do together to deliver care differently and to collaborate differently? And it was the office that brought forward the idea of pursuing this. And one of the things that we said is, in our area, we really have very little connection with our two hospitals. And in our area, the two hospitals have very little connection with each other. They're rarely in the same room. They're rarely talking. We wanted to get everyone in the room and look at opportunities for collaboration. We held a series of meetings, and through those meetings, identified a key issue that people really gravitated towards was reducing the overutilization of the emergency department and of the people that were really costing the healthcare system the most, those 5 to 10% highest overutilizers of the emergency department and the hospital system. And through a series of meetings, we determined that one of the ways that we would like to try to impact that is by enhancing care coordination, but not doing it where just the hospital employs a care coordinator. We wanted to work across multiple care settings. And so what we've done is we formed the Jefferson County Hotspotting Alliance. And this alliance is comprised of Jefferson Center, Metro Community Provider Network, Arapahoe House, the two local area hospitals, and our regional collaborative care organization, which is CCHA. And those organizations have collaboratively funded a position to do care coordination. We're about to actually move into hiring a second position. We're doing an evaluation of the program and are very intent on making sure that those patients that are identified through the hospital systems are able to get into primary care and into behavioral health. This is a very, very small pilot project. And was the Office of Healthcare Transformation solely responsible for it coming about? No. But what the Office of Healthcare Transformation helped to do was to bring forward the issues, do some research that really helped grounded us and get us all on the same page, helped to build consensus and make sure that the right people were at the table, and now this is actually coming to fruition. So it's something that I feel really proud of. Another kind of way that I know that I'm making a difference is that I'm increasingly asked to come and give talks and to do these. These are right here. These are our newsletters that I was referring to before. And people are actually seeing the Office of Healthcare Transformation as an internal and external resource. And just recognizing the value of having dedicated staff to do this work and to help make sense of the very complex world that we're all operating under right now. So I think that having an Office of Healthcare Transformation is something that any community mental health center could do. Right now we're the only ones that I'm aware of, but we would be more than happy to consult with you if you're interested in developing this within your centers, and I'm happy to take any questions right now.
Thanks, Mindy. I think three things, three words come to mind, you know, transformation, impact, and advocacy. I think those were all very critical to the success of this. You know, as I read down through these nominations, it's really hard. I'm glad I didn't have to judge any of this golden abacus stuff, so... We'll let Will get set up here.
Hello. There's a question in the back. So,
no.
I just put this in my pocket, and I just walked.
So out. Our next speaker, representing the Mental Health Center of Denver, is Will Latimer. He's the program manager of the Access Team. Today's discussion will be same-day alternative scheduling. The nomination for the Golden Abacus Award. And one thing I need to tell you, this award is granted for projects, methodologies, systems, or procedures that demonstrate best practices. And I think, as Mindy so appropriately put, definitely a best practice. So with that, we'll let Will have the floor and move on from there.
Okay. Can you hear me now? Yeah? Okay. Well, hello, everybody. Thank you for having me here. Are you having a good conference? Yeah? So I've been walking around with this thing that says speaker. And, you know, I've never had one of these before, right? So people look at me either in feeling sorry for me because I'm going to have to get up and talk, or how did you manage to do that? And I don't know how to answer either one of those questions. So same-day alternative scheduling came about from a discussion about people not coming up or showing up for their appointments, the no-shows, right? The no-shows, the late cancels. So all these terrific, wonderful programs that we have require the consumer to show up, right? And so we're like, well, what's going on? So with the usual conversation, what's the barrier? How come? What happened with your bus tokens? All of that stuff, right? Does that sound familiar? Yes, okay, good. So then we asked IT to help us out. It's like, who is no-showing? What's going on? And when you ask IT for information, they give you lots of data with numbers that don't make any sense, right? So then you have to sit down with them and have them explain what this is. So what we found out is a lot of the people that were not showing for their appointments or doing late cancels, and that's less than 24 hours, were actually still being seen. And we scratched our heads, like, what is that about? How is it that they're no-showing and they're still being seen? Well, you take a typical week, so your appointment's on a Monday, and they show up on a Thursday. And somehow or other, we were able to manage to see that person on a Thursday. So we continued to look at that data and decided, you know, we need to continue to talk to them about what barriers are going on. We need to continue to help them get to their appointments. But we also need to look at what they're saying to us through their behavior. And what they were saying to us is, I come in when I'm ready to come in, not according to your schedule, MHCD. So, okay. So then we decided, okay, well, then what we're going to do is create something called same-day alternative scheduling. And what same-day alternative scheduling does is it allows the person to call the day that they want to come in or show up the day that they want to come in, and they can see their therapist or their therapist, their therapist or their psychiatrist, right? And when we met with the therapist and the psychiatrist, we said, we need for you to start blocking out 30-minute appointments every afternoon for this population of people to come in and see you, right? And so the consumer has until noon to either just drop in or make the call, and we will slip them into those same-day alternative schedule slots. Now, if one's not available, which happens sometimes, then they can come in the next day, or they can come in next week, or whenever it is they decide they want to come in again. If we don't fill that appointment, then we will switch it over at noon. We'll switch it over to an ER appointment, right? So if someone has an emergent need, even though I saw my therapist last week, something really bad happened in my life this week, I really need to see my therapist, we can take that same-day alternative schedule appointment and turn it into an ER appointment, okay? So that appointment kind of serves two needs. And if nobody comes in, then that therapist or psychiatrist can use it as a time for doing paperwork, administrative work, or something like that. I have to tell you, it's very rare that we don't fill those appointments. That's always getting filled. I see heads shaking. Yay, glad. Another thing that I want you to hear is in the title, Same Day Alternative Scheduling, we know that when someone makes an appointment, like at 8 o'clock in the morning for a 2 o'clock in the afternoon appointment, they are going to more than often show up for those appointments, right? Lots and lots of research is out there about how far away the appointment is from when they make the appointment, your no-show rate goes up and up and up. So if I can have someone call me at 9 o'clock in the morning and say, I want that 2 o'clock appointment, they're more than likely going to show up for that appointment. So it really helps us utilize those very important scheduled appointments, right? Because we all have a lot of people coming in to see us now because of Medicaid expansion and all the other stuff that people have been talking about through this whole conference. Another really important part of this project was to make sure we communicated to the consumers they were not being punished. It was a huge part of this project. Just because you're not showing for your appointments or you're doing late cancels doesn't mean you're being punished. We are watching what you're doing, we're responding to what you're doing, and we are going to offer you appointments to fit with how you are living. You come in when you want to come in, which is the same as what I do, and I'm sure most of you do. When you want to see your primary care doctor, do you schedule it 3 months out? I've got the flu, I'm going to have the flu in 3 months. No, you call them and they get you in today or tomorrow. So why not do that for the people that we serve, right? So when our clinicians first started talking about this with our consumers, we had to give them some scripts about how to talk about it with the consumer. You want to make sure that you tell them you can come in anytime you want, which is a really nice story as to you have to come in 3 weeks from today at 2 o'clock. Well, I don't want to come in 3 weeks from today at 2 o'clock. I want to come in when I want to come in. So as you opened up that conversation with the consumers, they are already feeling good about it. It's like, oh, I'm in control, right? And as people recover more and more control of their lives, this is supporting that for them. So it was really nice that they could have that. Then we had to put in some safeguards, because I'm sure some of you have worked with some people that want to see their therapist every day. Anybody had that experience? Want to see their psychiatrist every day? So we had to put in some safeguards. It's like, okay, you saw your therapist on this day, you now, unless it's an emergency type of thing, but for a regular appointment, you got to come out 30 days, 3 weeks, whatever they have agreed upon, right? The other safeguard we had to put in place is to make sure people didn't fall through the cracks, right? Don't want that happening. So working with our IT department, we had them, you know, go out every day and look at when was the last time a consumer was seen, and if it was longer than what we wanted it to be, it would show up on a task list for that therapist or a task list for that psychiatrist. And then we set up a whole process, which I'm not going to go into today, but a whole outreach process, phone calls, letters, things like that. And between doing the outreach, making sure people weren't overusing it, we've had a really good success with this. And it wasn't the silver bullet, though, right? No-shows are complicated. It's not one program. But you take a recipe of this program, you take a recipe of the conversations, of what are the barriers that are going on, you throw in some reminder calls, that, all of that, starts helping to reduce your no-show rate and increasing your show rate, which is what we were looking for, and to meet the consumer where they're at. So same-day alternative scheduling is working for us. The consumers are liking it. The clinicians are really enjoying it. And now we've moved it to another place, and that is at Access. When someone comes in the door for the first time, we talk to them. We have traditional scheduling, or we have call when you want to come in. And believe it or not, people want to do that too. So right off the bat, we don't even have to educate them anymore. It's like, well, that's how I go to my dentist. That's how I do all these other things. So it's working even at the front door. So same-day alternative scheduling, it's working for us. I like it. I need to breathe. That's it. Questions. Question.
So have you thought more expanding the hours?
Yes.
Currently you're doing it in the afternoon.
Right. So if someone's caseload has a lot of people with same-day alternative scheduling, we will expand it easily. We'll add another 30 minutes, or we'll add a whole afternoon if that's what their caseload looks like. We'll absolutely do that. Putting them in the morning, we've thought about it. It's not something that we're really thinking about doing right away, but we would certainly do that. If we were meeting with a consumer and a consumer said, I always work in the afternoons and I need to have morning appointments, you know, we would talk with them and figure out a way to make that work for them. But in general, we want to give them time to call in the morning. A lot of our folks are on meds that make them sleep late. They're groggy. So we get that noon time cut off. And then we can switch that appointment around. Other questions?
Would you run into severe overscheduling?
No. No. You mean the person who wants to see their therapist every day?
No. I think like supposing 10 people in the morning called. Somebody who has 3 slots open.
Right. No, we're not running into that because we're monitoring it all the time. So if some therapist or psychiatrist has a caseload where we're noticing there's a lot of SDAS calls coming in every day, we go out, look at the schedule, and we start opening up more of those 30-minute slots. All of them. We asked all of them to do it. So all the traditional outpatient therapists and all of our psychiatrists, we asked them to do it. Now, case management, they don't do that because we're already sending people out into the community, bringing them in, so it didn't make sense to do it there.
Do you have a procedure when
a
therapist and your psychiatrist is ill or out for the day?
Yep, we do. If someone's out ill for the day for the therapist, we have our administrative staff calling and canceling appointments. We have on-call people that if there's an emergency going on, they can handle all of that. Other questions? Come on, give me one more. I've been waiting all day to do this. Okay, thank you. She gave me one more question.
What has been the hardest part in terms of the cultural change? How long have you been doing
that? That's a very good question. We started it last November. The hardest part was getting the clinicians to understand it. The consumers, there were a few consumers that we had to really work on. It's not a punishment type of thing. But the clinicians, well, what do you mean? I don't know who's going to be in my 3:30 appointment. How's this going to work? You know, and it's like, you know this person. You just don't know when they're coming in until that day. And once they kind of started doing it, they actually loved it. No. No. If there are people who really don't want to do it, right, we say try it for 3 appointments. And if you don't like it after 3 appointments, we will put you back in traditional scheduling. But if you start no-showing again, we're going to readdress same-day alternative scheduling. So, and it, once someone goes there, oftentimes they want to stay there. They like it. I call when I want to come in. They just like it. I like it. And that's really good. Another question.
Is there any type of accountability?
Right. So that happens a little bit. It's certainly because these are people that tend not to show up for their appointments. And we don't look at it in terms of accountability. We think about it as what else is going on? What can we do to help this person? We've had those conversations as to barriers. We've done same-day alternative scheduling. We try to figure out what's going on. Is it a mismatch with the therapist? Right? We're not meeting the need in some way. So we spend even more time looking at that and trying to figure it out. Any other questions? Y'all are great. And we do wonderful work. So good hand to everybody here. All right. Now I can wear this with pride.
Awesome. Okay, thanks, Will. So you know what I've noticed of these nominations today is everyone is thinking ahead. They're not thinking in the box anymore, and I know we use that term an awful lot, out of the box, and what we want to do with this, but everybody's looking to the future. You know, Mindy, with the transformation, we all talk about how critical care for our clients is and making those things happen. You know, Will demonstrates that. And I think this last one will also follow along those lines. I would like to introduce the 2014 winner of the Golden Abacus Award, Aurora Mental Health Center. Outstanding. Susie Scherzer is our therapist of the day. She's a therapist at the Aurora Health Center. She manages the intern program. She works with adults having both developmental disabilities as well as mental illness. She's been at Aurora Mental Health Center for over 18 years, and she's been the manager of this program for over 9. The student internship and training programs was the award nomination this year. Our nationally recognized student internship training programs at Aurora Mental Health provide learning experiences to 114 students from 37 schools and programs throughout the U.S. Programs include a bilingual internship program supporting students who work with immigrant and refugee populations, a peer training program, and internships for all levels of graduate education in mental health fields. So with that, we'll turn the floor over to Susie and let her explain a little bit more about their award.
Thank you. Thank you for being here. I, too, have a speaker badge, and I have to share that my badge says my real name, which is Elise. Okay? I feel compelled to tell you that there are only maybe a handful of people on the planet who know me only as Elise, but I'm sharing this with you all today. But my nickname is Susie, and it's been that way since I was a very, very little girl. I'm very excited to tell you about the intern programs at Aurora Mental Health Center. We do provide training to students at every level of graduate education in the mental health field. So what does that mean? We have our psychiatry resident program has been around for over 16 years. I do know that we have usually 3 residents per year. We have a pre-doctoral internship program that has also been around, I think, since 1997. We have 10 pre-doctoral internship students every year. I'm sorry, 5 per year, but they all overlap, so there's 10 per fiscal year. We also have, I'm just going to run through the different varieties of students we have. We have nurse practitioner students who work with our nurse prescribers, learning that trade, and I shouldn't say trade, learning the field prescribing. We have undergraduate students this year in nursing also who worked with a SAMHSA grant with our MCPN program, providing community resources and wellness information to our consumers with chronic and persistent mental health issues. We have, what else? We had 46 students in doctoral, master's level programs in psychology, counseling, and social work. And these students were all spread among our numerous locations. By the way, we had about, I think on a given day, there were 70 students that could be found located in our 12 locations. So we have, most students are there for an academic year. We have some students that are there for shorter times. So where did I leave off? So nursing students, undergraduate nursing students. We also have high school students. We had a high school student 6 years ago who wanted to pursue psychiatry. We couldn't figure out where would be an appropriate place for her. This was one of the Denver Public Schools programs, and in their junior year, these students do an internship. We figured out that perhaps working with one of our prevention programs would be a good fit, and since then, we have had students from this high school intern at our award-winning Aurora Youth Options program. Aurora Youth Options provides mentoring and tutoring to at-risk youth to help mentor them to reduce the chance of gang involvement in the future. We have a bilingual program that students who are bilingual in English and any other language that our clients use can receive a stipend for that. Currently, actually since 2011, Aurora Mental Health Center and its partner, Asian Pacific Development Center, have provided services in over 18 languages. This past year, we had students, I believe we had 8 bilingual students who spoke collectively, I think, 5 different languages. Spanish most of our bilingual students are Spanish speakers. We have a student speaking Thai, Korean. There's a lot of dialects that I cannot remember. but it's wonderful for our clients because they are able to receive services in their native language. What else am I missing? We actually have a horticultural therapy student this year. This is a first. Our Hampton Academy program is a day treatment program for adolescents. And the director there has a garden program that he's had for several years. This year we have a horticultural intern that has been helpful in planning and planting their garden that they just had their annual harvest festival, I think, was it a month ago or so, which has been wonderful for them. We also have occupational therapy students come every spring for 1 week. It is the University of Missouri's master's program in occupational therapy. They do 1 week, 40 hours with us each. This is the students' first year in their master's program, so this is their first exposure to mental health. And we have these students working with our adults in our vocational program and have provided some amazing and wonderful information to our vocational and clinical staff regarding individual strengths and limitations in perhaps vocational work. And we have rehabilitation counseling student that we've hired. So you see lots and lots of different types of students. In terms of the costs, there's a cost involved with a psychiatry resident program, and I saw the figures recently, but I don't want to throw a number out because I'm sure I'll be wrong. So there is a cost involved with that. There is a cost involved with our pre-doctoral interns, psychology interns. Each of those individuals is a paid full-time staff member for 1 year. Our bilingual students receive a prorated stipend. It's prorated, it's $1,000 a month for full-time, but it's prorated based on their actual hours worked during the time that they're in their internship. They receive additional support and training working with refugee and immigrant populations in whatever language is appropriate. Let's see, the other costs involved, we provide business cards to clinical students. We don't provide business cards if an individual is not seeing clients, that wouldn't be appropriate. We also provide appropriate supervision to each student. Social work interns receive supervision from a social worker. Psychology practicum students receive supervision from a psychologist or another licensed clinical staff. And of course, master's level interns in the psychology or counseling or other fields receive supervision by a licensed mental health master's level therapist. So those are some of the costs. The benefits are that the students love being treated like a regular team member. There are an amazing amount of opportunities that students can be exposed to on their teams. And most of the students, I used to do exit interviews before the program got so big. It is unwieldy now because I have a clinical caseload to take care of in addition to managing this program. But I do try to stay current, and if there are problems, I like to be aware of them. Students love being involved to the extent that they feel like they can stretch themselves and learn as much as they can in their programs. They love the business cards. We also offer monthly luncheons with presenters of clinical interest. We have some amazing presenters at our center who present once a month different topics that students do not learn in the classroom. So that's a little bit about the costs and the benefits. The benefits to us, the big one, is that we hired 22 of this year's interns, which I think is a record. Forgot to mention the peer program. The peer program this year was an innovative program. It's called Peer University, and it was a structured training program for consumers who have had their own diagnosed mental illness, who are in recovery, to go through, I believe it was from October through July, something like that. And these consumers are working with all of our different teams, providing peer support to our clients and families, which has been a wonderful educational set of information for all of us. The other benefit that I mentioned just recently was the hiring of our 22 interns. How great is it to be able to train people before you hire them and then get a chance to hire them? I have business cards with me. I don't think there's anything else I can add. If anyone has any questions, I'd be happy to answer them. I do have business cards, and I'll be happy to provide you with my contact information. I do have actually a lot of other resources in terms of schools in the area with whom I have partnerships and from where our students come each year. Are there any questions? Yes. That's a good question. The schools find out about us. Initially, the individual who started the program 16 years ago went to different schools and talked to faculty there and talked about our center and what we can provide to students. Currently, we have ongoing relationships with many universities in the Denver area and actually across the country, too. So they know what type of training we provide. They know that we provide appropriate training for their students, and we're a nationally recognized program. We have actually some students have actually found us on their own years ago, and those schools we continue to have relationships with. A great example was a young woman in a local high school who wanted to pursue psychiatry, and I didn't quite know what we would do with a high school student. I mentioned that about her working with the Aurora Youth Options program. And similarly with the occupational therapy program at the University of Missouri, an individual had a family member in Colorado, wanted to come for a week in March, I guess, to go ski, which sounds good to me. And so she came for a week and did her internship with us. And we have since had every year since then, I believe, for six years now, students from that program at our center. Every other school we maintain contacts with. I contacted the CSU, one of their horticultural programs, and found out about the Horticultural Therapy Institute. And I learned that in Colorado, in order to become a certified horticultural therapist, you have to have an internship. So we actually provided this internship for this individual, and we hire her. A lot of other schools in the area provide some specialty training. For example, the School of Public Health at the University of Colorado. We've had several students who have come to us and have worked in our research institute who have come from the School of Public Health. And that's another example. That's all I can think of. I'm sure there are many, but are there any other questions? Sure. Hmm. I think it has contributed to the idea of inclusiveness, that students are included at every level of their function. Students participate in team meetings. They participate in intakes. Clinical interns, obviously. They participate in other center trainings that become available. And I believe that the center as a whole are very, very open and receptive to having students be at the center and provide the training and the experience. A lot of program directors have developed their own relationships with particular school programs to the extent that I don't get applications from some students. I get a phone call or an email from a manager saying, I have two students starting with me next month. Here is their information. The other thing that happens in our program is that students are required to complete all of the same paperwork, well, similar paperwork, but all of the same training as far as HIPAA and corporate compliance and other requirements as all of our staff, so that nobody starts without that information. Yes?
With this continual stream of young, bright, eager minds, are you seeing more innovation, perhaps, or more ideas for change?
I think so. I think it brings a wonderful energy to every team I visit, actually. I think it, because some of our staff are also faculty at some of these school programs, I think we're able to keep up with the cutting edge of whatever's going on in the field, which is wonderful. Brings a good, wonderful energy. It's got wonderful ideas, too. Thank you.
So we've been talking a lot about outcomes, and so how are you measuring the effectiveness or the outcomes for the consumers who are served by these?
That was another thing. Thank you for asking that question. There was a Denver Post publication, and it was posted online in 2009, discussed the tremendous growth in the Arapahoe County, which is one of our Front Range counties, for those of you not living on the Front Range. The Latino population grew since the year 2000 until 2009, 70%. So I think one of the things that happened is that students who were working in our various programs were able to help us meet the needs of our consumers by helping with the workload. In addition to the bilingual program, it assisted other staff members who perhaps were not bilingual in being able to fulfill the and meet the needs of the community at large. The other detail that I'd like to share is that in the year that just ended, the center served over 16,500 clients. Okay. Which is about double the number of clients served in the year that ended 2006. Okay, those 2 years, by comparison, the number of interns between 2006 and the past year, the number of interns has quadrupled during that time. So while the number of clients we saw had doubled in that same period, the number of interns quadrupled, you can see how much of a contribution our interns made in our center to be able to help share the workload. And also, we helped us fill some open positions because we were able to hire some of our interns. Is there a question back there? Someone nodding. Any other questions? Thank you for your time. Thank you. Thanks. Thank you. Thanks
nice
very much.
Done.
Thank you.
Okay, so I think just real quickly, it's worth mentioning our other nominee who were unable to participate this afternoon. And that was Community Reach Center, and their nomination for Abacus was the Tier Champions. During the implementation of a new electronic health record, Community Reach Center established a team of expert users from multiple domains to inform the process. The Tier Champions model, the commitment and quality, continuous improvement, and responsiveness to change that is essential for agency-wide implementation success. So I think each one of these looks to innovation, looks to advocacy, looks to supporting our clients. Remember, that's what we're all here for. And I think each one of them deserves one more round of applause. So.